بسم الله الحمد لله والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته and welcome back to Ilm Institute News. First things first, I want to jump right into it. We have an article here published by the New York Times, February 18th, 2019, and the title is The Creeping Liberalism in American Islam. And this is a pretty clever title because a lot of people who are against Islam and they don't want Islam in America, they always talk about creeping Sharia. They make it seem like the Muslims are trying to take over America by one step at a time implementing the Sharia before one day they're just going to wake up and they're going to be living in an Islamic country. However, this article suggests that rather than Sharia creeping into American law, you find liberalism creeping into Islam. Now, before we even jump into the article, I want us to get into a habit of keeping in mind who is writing this stuff. What publications are putting them out? So it says the author here is Mustafa Akyol. And according to his Wikipedia page, it says that he was born to a liberal journalist. If you go to his website, it says that he is a Turkish journalist and author, and he studied political science and history. So this is a Turkish man born to a liberal journalist, and he's not an Islamic scholar. Rather, he studied political science and history, and he contributes to the New York Times. So right under the title, we see, far from spreading Sharia, as Islamophobes have suggested, America's Muslim clerics are focusing on a more familiar trend, youngsters blending into American life. So there are a couple of things about this sentence that I personally find a bit troubling. Perhaps I am misinterpreting what the author is trying to say, but the way that I see it, the way that it comes across to me, is that he's kind of suggesting that the Sharia isn't so compatible with American life. But you don't have to worry about that because actually, young Muslims are sort of moving a little bit away from the Sharia or changing things to try to modernize it, to try to blend into American life. Well, why is that? Why is the Sharia seen as so incompatible with American life? Why is it that when it comes to Islam and its teachings, its law, people think it's so incompatible? However, if you look at any religion, look at what Hinduism teaches, look at what Judaism, Christianity, look at any other religion. Are there things that those religions would practice in a society that was based on their religion that Americans would find incompatible? Well, without the shadow of a doubt, absolutely. However, there's much more hatred, much more animosity towards Islam, towards the Sharia, than these other religions. In fact, they have boiled down the Sharia to basically one or two ideas. When you mention the Sharia, even though it's this massive, complex system of life that deals with everything, they boil it down to one or two things. And if we continue reading this article, we see that the author even mentions those two things. Since 9/11, a recurrent theme in far-right circles of America has been creeping Sharia. It reflects the fear that Islamic law will silently spread through the land of freedom to ultimately overtake it, to put all women in burqas and all adulterers to death. So that's what people think of the Sharia. They think that it's women in burqas killing fornicators. Well, ask yourself, in Judaism, is there a tradition in their books, in their religion, of stoning adulterers? In any of the other religions that people practice in America, is there anything that you can find in their religious texts that people could highlight and say go against American freedom? Of course, but people don't treat Islam the same as all these other faiths. So the author goes on to say that there's actually a liberal trend going on in the Muslim community in America. He says, perhaps nothing marks this liberal trend more than the skyrocketing acceptance of gay marriage, which, as a 2017 poll showed, is now stronger among American Muslims than among white evangelical Christians. It is also reflected in the pro-LGBTQ stance of two new Muslim congresswomen, Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar. The conservatives are understandably worried that this may go too far. For example, Rashid Dar, a thoughtfully committed Muslim academic, fears the prospect of an irreversible transformation in his community. A life of adhering to political liberalism in the public sphere, but social conservatism at home or at the mosque, very easily runs the risk of creating severe cognitive dissonance, he told me. I used to fear that this might lead to widespread reform Islam movements. What I fear now is widespread nihilism and apathy toward faith. The author says, I think that while this concern is understandable, the opposite may also be true. Young generations may lose the faith if Islam remains too closed to rationality, individuality, tolerance, and freedom. So to give the author some credit, it seems like he is sort of bringing both sides. You have those who are concerned about Muslims trying to change their deen, but it also seems like the author, he leans more towards liberalism. I think this statement here is actually quite problematic. He says, young generations may lose the faith if Islam remains too close to rationality. I think to suggest that Islam is not rational is extremely problematic and dangerous. He goes on to say, for that reason, I find the American Muslim quandary fascinating and promising. Liberalism as a framework for a free society is painfully lacking in large parts of the Muslim world today. If the Muslim community in the United States can embrace that by reinterpreting its traditions without losing itself, it could contribute to the broader ummah by offering new perspectives and a lived example. So after reading this article and bringing up the idea of Islam and liberalism, are they at odds with one another? Should we try to combine the two? I'm going to argue that I believe that a way forward for Muslims in America and something that we should make our priority is strengthening, educating, and supporting the African-American Muslim community. We need to support and give more of a voice to African-American Muslims. Of course, this is something that as Muslims we should be concerned with anyway. However, I am 100% convinced that we underestimate the importance of doing this. If we take a look at some of the Muslims in America who are inclined towards liberalism, we'll find that they have certain things in common. So for example, the author of that article, he was born in Turkey. The Congresswoman Ilhan Omar, who was mentioned in the article, she was born in Somalia. The other Congresswoman mentioned, Rashida Tlaib, was born to working class Palestinian immigrants. And the very well-known activist Linda Sarsour, she was born as well to Palestinian immigrants. So one thing all of these Muslims have in common is they were either not born in America or their parents were not born in America. And that's not to say that they are any more or less American than anyone else. However, historical context matters. It can have an effect on the people you're speaking to, and it can even have an effect on the individuals themselves. So for example, some of the people in the society might view those who were born in another country or those whose parents were born in another country as less American. And I've literally heard people arguing that, look at Ilhan Omar, for example. We need to stop bringing these people into our country. We need to stop bringing these people from other societies who are at odds with American values into the United States, which is problematic for many different reasons. One being that Americans are nowhere near united on what values are American, and everyone seems to be at odds with one another. But the point is, this is how some people will view Muslims in America. And this can also have an effect on the individuals themselves. They might feel like, oh, you know what? I'm a guest in this country. I shouldn't be so harsh. I shouldn't come in and just say all of a sudden, hey, this country needs to be this way and go against the grain. They might feel like, you know what? These people, they brought me to their country. They brought my parents to this country. I should try to assimilate. And therefore, some of them might be more willing to compromise their religion. However, when it comes to the African-American Muslim community, just look at the da'wah of Malcolm X. Many African Americans have a longer history in the United States than other groups. There are African Americans whose lineage goes back hundreds of years in America. I myself, for example, many people will look at me and think that, oh, I'm this white American. My lineage goes back for a long time in America. However, if you actually study my family tree, 3/4 of my ancestors came to America a few generations ago. And what Malcolm X used to do when he would have debates and he would be preaching his beliefs, he was fearless and unapologetic because he knew his history. He'd be on talk shows and they would try to say, Malcolm, what's your last name? What's your real last name? And he would say, I don't know my last name because my family, my ancestors were taken as slaves from Africa and brought to this country. And they would try to insist, okay, but what's the last name that your grandparents had, your parents had? And he would say, they don't know their last name. My ancestors were enslaved and brought to this country, and they had their culture and their religion wiped out. Therefore, I go by Malcolm X. You don't get to tell me what my last name is. And this was extremely powerful. When Malcolm X was unapologetically preaching Islam, and people would try to criticize him and influence him, he would say things like, you don't get to criticize me. You don't get to tell me my values or my religion. My people have been enslaved, discriminated against for hundreds of years. When you say that you want what's best for me, I don't believe you. And I don't need you to tell me what's best for me. And this was very powerful. How can you argue with that? Historical context matters and it can be very effective. So for example, take the Jewish community. They constantly bring up the Holocaust. When they argue against anti-Semitism, when they argue to support Israel, they always bring up the Holocaust. And people take that into consideration. It's very effective. Don't criticize the Jewish people. Don't you know that we were criticized in the past and they wiped this out? Don't criticize Israel. Don't you know that if we don't have a place to go, other countries are going to wipe us out? Don't you know history? They use history to their advantage. And it's very effective. That being the case, African Americans have a longer history in America than almost any other group. And they also have a strong case for not being discriminated against, for being able to believe and practice what they want. And not only that, but there are many, many African American Muslims. It's a very large community. So not only is it part of Islam to assist them, to help them, to educate them, to support them, to love them, but it's also in our own best interest politically. Read the autobiography of Malcolm X. Go on YouTube, see some of the speeches, some of the debates that he was in. His da'wah led to masses of Americans embracing Islam. Part of da'wah, part of inviting people to Islam, part of trying to build our own Islamic communities is having hikmah, having wisdom. It's understanding your historical context. It's having the right people say the right thing at the right time to the right people. We should understand our history as Muslims in America. We should learn from the groups around us who have been able to effectively get the rights that they want in this country. Allah knows best. May Allah guide us to what's best. Alhamdulillah. Jazakum Allahu khairan. Wassalamu alaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh.